H, yeah, S, yeah, C, yeah, oh.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Gilder from HomeStudioCorner.com, and this is actually episode number 20 of Ask Joe. Now, Ask Joe has taken several formats. It started out with just a single blog post for a single question early on Home Studio Corner, and then it evolved into me answering questions in the forums, because I started getting more questions. Then that started taking up a lot of time just to type up all those answers, and I thought, you know what, let's start doing this in a sort of a podcast audio format. So I'm sure it'll evolve into something else down the road too. Who knows? But let's jump in. I've got several questions I want us to dive into today, and I think we've got seven in all. So I'll just jump in on the first one, and we'll get going. First question's from Erez. Says, hey Joe, I must say I'm really impressed with the website, and since I discovered it a couple of days ago, I just can't stop reading and learning more and more with every sentence you write. That's awesome. Thanks, Erez. My question is like this. I've been placed in charge of a recording studio placed inside a performing arts school in Santa Clarita, California, and I'm new to advertising when it comes to the music industry. I was wondering if you've got any valuable tips for advertising I could use. I'm currently trying Craigslist, but what else would you recommend as far as an offline and online advertisement? Thanks a lot, and would appreciate your answers. It's a great question, Erez. I talked about this a little bit in a blog post entitled 10 Ways to Promote Your Home Studio, and those would apply to a commercial studio as well. But there's a couple things. Online advertising is great, and I think there's certainly a place for that. But typically with online advertising, what you're going for is you're wanting to advertise to everyone. So for example, if you were to advertise on my website, that'd be great in one sense, but you'd have people all over the world who would be seeing your advertisements when you really only need people in that Santa Clarita area seeing those ads. So a lot of online advertisement strategies wouldn't really work for you, because you're not trying to attract clients from all over the world, I would imagine. You're trying to attract those that are close to home. That said, you can do a couple things as far as localized advertising. If you want to take out an ad with a local newspaper and have them, because all of them have websites now, and have them advertise on their website, that way it'll be people in your community mostly that are on those websites, and then they'll be seeing your ads. One thing I've done at a studio here that I worked for is they had the local newspaper put on a battle of the bands, and as a studio, we offered to give away a free day in our Studio A to the winner in exchange for some that amount's worth in advertising on their website. And that's one thing you could do, and that's certainly a cool way to get some clients. And then you can certainly do Craigslist. I mean, I can't think of any reason not to be on Craigslist and to be doing that and advertising your services there. But anybody can advertise on Craigslist, so sometimes people have to wade through a lot of the garbage to get to your ad. So I think the biggest way, if you're going to grow your studio, whether you're a home studio guy just trying to get a client or two, or your professional studio like yours, Erez, where you're trying to maintain a business, you really just have to get out there and go where the musicians are. As far as online, we've talked about a couple options. MySpace is still, I think, a viable place to search for musicians, because you can search by location. So create a profile for the studio, get in there and get in there and become friends with all the local bands, get familiar with their music, send them messages, let them know that you're there, and maybe you'll develop a few relationships here and there. But the biggest thing is you really just got to be in your local music scene. You can advertise to your heart's content, but that's not going to bring in the kind of people that you want. You really got to get out there. And the best way to do that is just to be on the local concert circuit and hitting up all the venues regularly on the weekends and weeknights and whenever there are shows. And, you know, getting to know who the bands are, meeting them, and just networking. Once you get to know them, at some point they're going to want to record again, and they should know that you what you offer and go from there. Another good way is, you know, current clients that you have. Every musician I know runs with multiple other musicians, so there's no reason why they shouldn't have at least a handful of musician friends who are going to need your services as well. So if you can come up with some sort of a referral system, where if they refer somebody to you, you pay them $50 or something like that, I know musicians would probably eat that up, but you just got to get creative with all those types of things. But you, at the end of the day, you have to go to where the clients are. You can't just wait for them to come knocking down your door, especially now that they can record a decent sounding demo at home. You got to give them a reason to come to you. So, Arez, I hope that answers your question. That's a really good question and something we should all be thinking about if we want to get more clients. Eugene has a question about drum machines. He says, the drum sounds native to GarageBand are fairly limited. Plus, I need a variety of beats for songs I'm writing. What do you recommend on either the hardware or software side? Well, I don't use any hardware drum machines or drum samplers. I don't have anything against them. I just never have used them, really. My drum program of choice actually is Easy Drummer, which it sells for around $150, and it's got really good sounding sampled drums. Now, that's an actual drum kit. If you're wanting more electronic drums, there's plenty of electronic drum programs out there, like Motu has their BPM. Native Instruments came out with one. You've got Battery from Native Instruments, and then someone else came out with one recently too that I'm trying to remember, but it's slipping my mind right now. But there's quite a few. If you go to somewhere like Sweetwater.com and just look up drum software, it'll pull up pages of different options for you. So I like Easy Drummer. It's not going to be the best option if you're doing electronic music or you need to make, quote, beats. But if you're needing a drum sound, it's really good. And they've got expansion packs for different genres of music and things like that. So definitely worth looking at. Good question. Steve has a question. Short-time listener, first-time caller. That's awesome. Love the stuff you're putting up. I found a lot of helpful tips. My question isn't in the realm of recording per se, but since you apparently have been around in the business, I thought you'd be able to direct me somewhere or just offer your opinion. I'm beginning a compilation CD of people who have been involved with the Families in Crisis ministry we have at church. I'll be using original songs and performances by people who have either benefited from or have participated in the ministry. Proceeds will all go back into the ministry. What do I need in the way of releases from the songwriters and the artists slash performers for this? I'd be looking for some kind of non-exclusive agreement. Any thoughts? Thanks. Well, Steve, that's a good question. I'm not an expert on licensing and copyright and everything else. I have taken a copyright law course, so I understand everything there. Since what you're doing is mainly for a ministry benefit, and all the artists and songwriters and people that are going to be used on that, I would imagine, are fairly familiar with the ministry and are supportive. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing this anyway. So I don't think it's anything huge. I don't think that these people are going to come back and demand money when all the proceeds are indeed going to this charity. So I don't think there's a huge issue. If you're wanting to sell this for a profit for yourself, then obviously you need to make sure you get all that handled, squared, and squared away. But for this, I would say just a simple, just write up a contract, you both sign it, that says, you know, you're not benefiting monetarily from this, and all the proceeds are going towards this ministry, and that they're agreeing to give you the rights to this song for this specific compilation. I wouldn't say they should give you the rights for you to use that song on any future compilation. Just make it a one-time deal with the songwriters, especially because they're the ones who are entitled to royalties if you were to give those out. But since this is all for charity, I'd say just a simple contract and you're good to go. But always get it in writing. You never know. Something may happen down the road. And if you have something in writing, you're much better off than if it was just a good, you know, spit handshake kind of deal. So next question's from Al. He says, hey, Joe, I've been working with Pro Tools for years, unfortunately, just as a hobby and as a tool to program or to grab my ideas. Anyhow, here's my silly question. I'm preparing one of the songs to be sent off for mastering. Every track is at a good level, fairly low. The master fader at zero shows that the max peak is around green and yellow, and he's referring to the colors on the meters in Pro Tools. But how do I find out the exact dB level at, how do I find out the exact level at dB instead of relying on colors? Because I read somewhere that the final output has to be at maximum 4 dB. Thanks for your help and advice. I really appreciate it. Al, I don't think you're quite... I think you may be misunderstanding what they're talking about. When you say maximum 4 dB, I think you may just be talking about plus 4 dBU, which is just, it's just a measurement of a line level output, a balanced line output. As far as needing to know exactly what level your songs are at, there are good dynamic range plugins out there. If you just do a search for free dynamic range plugins. There's one I saw just the other day. I can't remember who makes it, but Ian Shepherd over at productionadvice.co.uk has a post recently on that. And it's a free plugin that'll show you the dynamic range of your song and also lots of good measurements for where your level is at. Really, there's no reason for you to know that unless you're mastering it yourself. So it's really a non-issue. I wouldn't worry what exact level it's at. It just needs to have a good solid level, and you need several dB of headroom at the top to give your mastering engineer some room to work. So as far as the exact level, honestly, I can't imagine a situation where that's going to really help you, as long as it sounds good and it's not super close to peaking. You've got several dB of headroom there, you'll be fine. And let's see, it also says here, let me know your rates for mastering a song. Okay, I'll email you that, and I'm happy to do that as well. All right, next question, and I think we're a little over halfway through. This is from Jerry. Jerry says, hey Joe, you have a video online about how to make your hard drive an audio record volume, where most problems ended, mine begin. After clicking the T to change the mode of my hard drive, the following message popped up. My book cannot be designated as an audio record volume because it is not a valid audio volume. By the way, I'm working with an eMac with Pro Tools 7. Well, Jerry, that's a good question. What he's referring to is if your hard drive won't allow you to record in Pro Tools, or Pro Tools won't allow you to record to a specific hard drive, if you go into the workspace in Pro Tools where it shows you all your hard drives, there's a couple columns there. And if you click on the A column, which stands for audio, you can change that from playback to either transfer or record. And if you set it to record, most of the time that fixes your problems and you can go start recording. But it sounds like in your case, Jerry, it could just be that your MyBook isn't compatible. I've got a MyBook. I don't record to it, but I use it for backup. And I have recorded to it before, and it worked fine. I would say, first and foremost, I would back up all the files on that drive and format it. It could just be that it's not formatted in the proper format. If you're on a Mac, which you are, you need to format it. It's just go into your disk utility, format that where I think it's Mac OS journaled, and just wipe out the whole thing. That's what I did when I first got my MyBook. I formatted it so it would be compatible. If that doesn't work, I don't know. It may just be that eMac, it's an older computer. It just may not, the chipset and the hard drive and everything else may not be playing nicely. So you may need to get a drive that's specifically for recording, like a Glyph drive, which I use. But I try that formatting thing first. Okay, Tony has a question about tempo change. He says, hey Joe, I really enjoy your HSC site and I find it very informative. Thank you. I have a question about tempo change. I'm using Sonar 8 Producer, and I've recently completed tracking a project and now would like to change the tempo of the entire project from 130 BPM to 126. Is there an effective way to go about doing this? Thanks for the help and keep up the good work. Well, Tony, I would start by saying you really, really, really need to know if it's worth the change. I know that 4 beats per minute can be a big difference, or maybe it's not that big of a difference and you may be making a bigger deal out of this than it really needs to be. I don't know. I've not heard the track, but this is why I stress pre-production so much and getting the tempo right before you record, because afterward it's really hard. You can use time stretch plugins and compression plugins to slow the track down without changing the pitch of everything, but you will almost always have artifacts and it will almost always degrade the audio quality. So I really don't know of a great way for you to do that. I'm sure Sonar has some time stretching and compression algorithms, and you can try those to where it just squishes the track down and makes it a little bit slower. But honestly, if it was me, I'd learn to either live with that tempo and work from there, and maybe just try some different things in the production side of things to make up for any lack of energy that the song has, or if it has too much energy and needs to slow down. But otherwise, I'd go back and maybe re-record it. But I know that's not a good option. I'm not a big advocate of going back and re-recording everything if there's a mistake. But big things like tempo, that's hard to undo. So I'm sorry if that's not the answer that you wanted, but hopefully that helps. Okay, and our last question is from Randy. It says, hi, Mr. Joe. Mr. Joe, that's great. How do I really, really get studio quality vocals out of a bedroom studio? A lot depends on the input, but sometimes some singers will sing out of tune and the studio will act as a backup, thus covering it. I'm into R&B and pop genres, thanks. I'm not sure what you mean about the studio acting as a backup, but as far as singers singing out of tune, there's nothing you can do to make a singer sing better, in one sense. If they're not a good singer, they're not a good singer, and you're not going to get a studio quality vocal out of a bad singer. So that's the first thing. If they're a good singer and they have a few notes that are out of tune, you can correct those with things like auto-tune, or you can try different techniques for how you give them their headphone mix. Maybe you have them put the headphones over one ear as opposed to both. Give them more or less reverb, more or less of the vocal level in the headphone mix. All those things can help if there are some pitch issues. I know sometimes I have pitch issues when I sing, and doing one of those things will help. And it usually changes from song to song what helps me the best. But as far as, you're right, the input is, and the microphone and the preamp are your biggest factors in getting a good sound. Now, obviously, like I said, the vocalist has to be good. But if you're using a really cheap microphone, really cheap preamp, and you want it to sound just like the studio records that you're listening to, that's not quite realistic. But that being said, you can get a good quality, a good sound out of inexpensive equipment, but you've got to really work at it. It's not something that's just going to come, you set things up, and it just sounds amazing, and you never had to do any work. Just like anything that's worth doing, it's going to take some work to get it to that point. And you should just use the tools that you have, EQ, compression, all of those things, and learn how they work and learn how to get rid of some of the excess low end. Learn how to compress it without overdoing it and learn how to make that vocal really stand out of the mix without being in your face. And once you do that and you're still not happy with the sound, but you've gotten it as good as you can, then you can upgrade to some better equipment because you'll be able to hear the difference at that point. So thanks for the questions, everybody. This is actually a lot of fun to talk through a lot of these topics. And if you've got questions, just submit it via the contact form on the website. And otherwise, that's it for me today. Thanks for listening. Again, this is Joe Gilder from HomeStudioCorner.com, and we'll catch you again next week. Oh.